Hello and welcome to my talk about the LCPP central system I implemented. And I would like to start with a short system overview of the whole system. We have a 14 kilowatt peak PV modules. We have a Fronius inverter and a 7.7 kilowatt hours BYD battery, which is connected to the inverter. Then we have a wallbox. The wallbox is from Schneider Electric. It's a EVLink Pro AC, which supports conveniently the LCPP version 1.6. There's a link if you want to check it. And it's hardwired to deliver 11 kilowatts per max. This is a simple diagram of the network. So we have the central system, which communicates with the wallbox via OCPP. Then there is an open API for the Fronius inverter and a not so open API for the Fronius inverter. And there is a JSON API for Avatar, which just provides information about the current price, which is there. And then let's start with the OCPP protocol. That's OCPP just means Open Charge Point Protocol. It is WebSocket based and it uses JSON based request response and error messages. The messages are structured like it's shown here. We have a message type ID, a UUID, an action, and the JSON payload. And for the response, it's basically the same, but there is no action. And in case of an error, we have the error message structure. There is, for the error message structure, there might be some vendor-specific descriptions in there, as well as in the JSON payload might be some vendor-specific errors. For a request, this is a specific boot notification. This notification will be sent after the charge point booted. That's why it's called a boot notification. And it contains some information about the charge point. And the central system can then decide if it's a charging point which is supported or not. For the response to this boot notification, it's just the same action with an empty payload. And requests always need to be acknowledged. And therefore, that's the response with the empty payload. For an error, we have, for example, the property constraint violation, which is reported. This error might come if you try to change some config values to an invalid value, then you get this error. For the central system, we have this architecture where there are basically three crates. The first one is the LCPP crate, then we have the Fronius crate, which implements all things for the Fronius. And then there is the Avatar integration. And all those three crates are then used within the central system to get this system working. Starting with the OCPP crate, this is basically the main component, which handles all WebSocket-based communication. It handles request response handling. But as of now, I'm not fully OCPP compliant just because there was not enough time. Maybe it will be supported in the future. Also, the OCPP component has an overall state for the charge point. For example, the charge point status. This status is the same as it's defined in the specification. It holds some measurements which are reported by the charge point and the maximum supported current, as well as the requests to send to the charge point and requests which await confirmation, because you always have to wait for the confirmation of a request. Additionally, there is a vector of running transactions which is stored. Basically, now this is not really needed because there can only be one transaction because the whole system is single-threaded and the charge point only has one connector, so only one transaction can run. For the smart charging mode, there is also something which is stored, which just indicates which mode is currently used. And the active charging profiles are also stored in this state. Then for the integration, there are some hooks provided from the OCPP crate, which is, for example, the status notification hook, the meter values hook, and the authorization hook. Those are the three hooks which are currently also implemented. And as you can see, the charge point state is passed to all those hooks, because basically all those hooks need information out of this state. And then I also implemented a classic builder pattern to provide some options to send requests to the charge point from the central system, and that I don't have to do this every time on my own. So this is basically the base implementation, the trait as it's called in Rust, where I implemented the serialize method that we can serialize the message. And then this slide shows an example where I implemented the set charging profile. This is just a command which is supported by the charging point. And there you can see some methods are implemented here. And then afterwards, you can use it, which is maybe a bit more interesting. This is the usage of this builder pattern. And then you can just send it as you call serialize the second member of this pair. This set charging profile request is already the request which is serialized into the OCPP message format. And also the UUID is returned, which is convenient because always there's always a new UUID created. Coming to the Fronius crate, we have the internal API, which I already mentioned, is not open. There is no documentation about it, but we need it. And for this way, I created the an adapter for the version API, and it just reports some versions of various devices and APIs. And for safety reasons, I implemented a check that if we have a firmware update, we will get a log message that the versions do not match, and therefore the whole system will not start because maybe something changed and we can't control it anymore. Then there is the logging API, which is needed to enable access to the web interface features. I don't know, maybe some of you know the Fronius web interface. You can do something there. You can set certain configurations. And we need it. You will see it on the next slide for a specific operation. And therefore, I had to implement this API endpoint. I don't know why, but Fronius implements some specific digest authentication protocol. This is not like it's described on Wikipedia or in the RFC. I have no idea why. But I managed to implement it, and now we are able to log into the inverter, and we are able to use this API. This API, so this is a screenshot of the web interface. Within this web interface part, you can set the time of usage of the connected battery, which basically says from time point A to time point B, you can regulate the battery. For example, you can deny that it will deliver any energy to anywhere, so nothing will be drained from the battery. This will be important later on as well. And those are the internal APIs, and then there is the Solar API. The Solar API is the public API, which is described. And we only need this endpoint, because this endpoint grants us access to real-time data. And from this endpoint, we need those three values. It's the power which is currently used by the battery, the current load, and the power produced by the photovoltaic system. Those are the three parameters we need later on. That's it, basically, for the Fronius. And for the Avatar API, we just implement the services API, which is provided by Avatar. And this API returns the current market price per euro per megawatt hour for the next 24 hours. And the library, which I implemented, just calculates the cheapest period. You can configure it. Currently, we always check that the prices are checked to the next day at 6 o'clock, because next day on 6 o'clock, it's mostly the time when the car is needed again, and therefore we want to be sure that it's charged until there. And that's basically it for the three supporting crates. And then we come to the smart charging part, which is the most interesting, actually. Upon startup, the central system sends some defined messages to the charging point, which means it sends at first a status notification request, then a clear charging profile request, which clears out all charging profiles. This is needed to get the charging point into a deterministic state, and that we can set other charging profiles again, because that's the third message, the set charging profile request. This one sets the maximum charging current, which can be configured in a configuration file, and just limits the amount of power the charging point should deliver. And then there is the change configuration request, where we can change certain configurations which can be defined in the configuration file as well. And last but not least, we request a 1 meter value request, which enables the charging point to measure configured values and send it to the central system. This is also needed to do some calculations, because this specific charging point does not support calculating cosinus phi by its own. So it doesn't report it, even though the standard supports it. But we need cosinus phi in our process. And for example, this one is an excerpt out of the config file, which specifies the config values which should be changed. This one is the meter value sample interval, which is set to 10 seconds, which means that every 10 seconds, the meter values will be sent. And the second one, this meter values sample data, just specifies which values are sampled by the charging point and which values are then sent over the OCPP protocol to the central system. This is not the full list. Currently, we also use much more. We actually use all values which are supported by the charging point to be reported to the central system. And this is then written into a database. And the overall smart charging feature is based on NFC ID tags, because basically all wall boxes just use NFC as authorization, and certain tags trigger certain charging point profiles. For example, in our case, we have three tags. One tag supports the instant charging profile, which basically means the car starts charging instantly. The second tag implements the PV overproduction and grid-based, which means the cheapest period will be calculated, which can be, I don't know, from 11 o'clock in the evening till 5 o'clock in the morning. And additionally, if there is enough power overproduced by the photovoltaic system, this power will be used. And the third tag is just for usage with the photovoltaic system, which works currently. If there is enough energy produced, it will charge the vehicle fully within, I think, within 4 to 5 hours, it's charged. And for the authorization, which it's basically, it is no authorization, it just decides which smart charging profiles are set. It verifies the received ID tag because all NFC tags have certain IDs stored. And if you hold it to the reader, this ID tag will be reported to the central system, and then it decides which smart charging profile should be applied to the charging point. Coming to the meter values hook, we need the power factor, as I already said. We can calculate the power factor like it's described here. And with that power factor, we are then able to calculate the maximum charging current. For the maximum charging current, we always take into account a certain time frame of the overproduction. Currently, we use 15 minutes. So within 15 minutes, the overproduction needs to exceed a certain threshold. And if this threshold is exceeded, the maximum charging current will be calculated. There are two ways of calculating the overproduction, because if the power of the battery is lower than 0.0, it actually means that the battery is currently charging. And we don't want that the battery does not charge. So the battery has more priority, and therefore we take it into account if it's lower than zero. If it's more than zero, which should actually not happen because we block the usage of the battery if the vehicle is charged, we don't take it into account. Apparently, the inverter always reports a very small amount of power which is drained by the battery, like 4 watts. And therefore, we just say if it's more than 0.0, we don't take it into account of this average calculation for the maximum charging current. The maximum charging current is also needed because the charging point does not support setting a maximum power. I don't know why. It just doesn't support it, and therefore we just set the maximum charging current, and it also works out. And also the maximum charging current needs to reach a certain threshold. I think for the most models of electric vehicles, it needs to reach 6 amperes, but this can be calculated. This can be set in the configuration as well. And yeah, having those meter values, it just constantly adjusts the charging profile. So if the average of the last 15 minutes changes to a lower or a higher maximum charging current, the charging profile will be adapted, and it will just charge with more current in this case then. For the status notification hook, we also receive status notifications every time you plug in the cable into the EV and into the wall box. You get some status notifications, and this hook just implements a state machine, which defines on which state transitions certain actions should be taken, like blocking the battery. As I said, we don't want that the battery is drained if we charge the vehicle, and therefore for certain state changes we just block it, and if the vehicle is done with charging, we unblock the battery again, that the battery can be used for other stuff like that. And now the big question is, did it actually work out what we did? And as you can see here, it actually did, because the purple series is the imported power of the EV. This is this one here, and the green one is the overproduction of the photovoltaic system. And you can see we always the EV always used less power than it was available. Probably because the overconsumption of the full system was a bit more. And basically, that's all of my presentation. And thank you very much. Any questions?
Regarding your setup, do you have a charge wall box that supports switching to single phase charging, so you can start at about 1.4 kilowatts, not having to wait for about 4.4 kilowatts till you can charge?
I don't know if the wall box supports it. I think it should support it, but we always charge with three phases.
Yeah. Usually PV optimized charging switches between single phase and three phase.
Could be that it supports it, yeah. Yes.
I came late, sorry, so I didn't hear all of your presentation. I realized recently that some products on the market, like Fronius, for example, have locked APIs, and yes, some products have open APIs, like GOI, I think, is one of those products. It's a miracle for me that consumers who would be able to buy a product with an open API for less money buy products for more money with a closed API. So this is not a question, this is just a statement. This is quite interesting. So it's that this is marketing or brand name or whatever. This is the power. I wanted to ask, there are consumer products like GOI, for example, has a product with a measuring equipment in the circuit board and the wall box, and you can buy it for 800 euros altogether, and they optimize charging combined PV and net grid and your, and they switch between one phase and three phases. What they don't do is, in German it's called bidirektionales Laden, so if you're able to draw power from the car, your solution is able to do this similar plus what? So I didn't understand that, what your solution could do more.
I don't know if my solution could do more, but for this, in this picture, is
okay,
here.
Okay.
And there is a certain affiliation with Schneider Electrics, and that's the reason why we choose this wall box.
Okay, okay.
So it might be that my solution can even do less. I'm pretty sure that my solution can do less compared to the base solutions on the market.
Okay, okay.
Just we had the system and it had to be integrated somehow. There is also a charging, a wall box from Fronius, which could be integrated because we have a...
Well, it's actually made by GOI. It's
okay.
And Fronius buys it from GOI.
Yeah, but you can just plug and play, right? Because we have a Fronius inverter, we have our own pilot, and then we just could use the one from Fronius, but this one costs, I don't know how much it costs, but the wall box from Schneider did not cost that much.
Okay, okay. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you very much.